Later, John didn't remember much of the following few weeks. If he concentrated, he'd be able to pick out the mission to MX-3224, where Ronan got bitten by a baby crocodile with horns, and a successful trade agreement with the Setharians on MX-3994, exchanging cotton wool, which, for some reason, they had in abundance on Atlantis. John really didn't want to know why. For a kind of rice beer that tasted like cider. For the most part, though, he walked around distracted by the way his body hummed with delight from having semi-regular, but highly irregular, sex. And by the panic litany of, what am I doing? What am I doing? That drowned out everything else. He'd flashed through scenarios of security cameras, emergency call-outs at the wrong time, just one pissed-off Marine or a scientist with a grudge dropping a word to Caldwell, who would be only too happy to get rid of him. John wasn't kidding himself. Or even Ronan seeing something, saying something to somebody, unthinking. Most of all, though, he felt like everyone would only have to look at his face and know. His uniform felt strange on his body, like it had been made for somebody else. Brushing rough in unexpected places, where his skin was sensitive from stubble burns or bites, making him shiver. Pulling it on in the morning after he'd been with Rodney, in his room or John's, or another place they'd found, away from where they might meet anyone at night. Felt strangely like putting on heavy armour or a straitjacket. He found himself standing straighter, stiffer during the day, to hold in the warm, melting feeling he carried around inside himself, like he was made of toffee left too long out in the sun. On nights when they were on missions, or Rodney was working, or they hadn't had time to exchange a shuttered glance, a nod, tonight, thank God, yes, tonight. He'd lie flat as a board on his bed, unable to unbend and relax enough to sleep. He hadn't felt like this since he was a teenager. Like the bruised centre of the universe, raw and bright. When, on the 17th day, Elizabeth stuck her head out of her office as he passed and said, Colonel, can I have a word? He felt the fight or flight adrenaline kicking in before he'd even walked through the door. When she looked at him seriously and said, John, whatever's going on between you and Rodney has got to stop. He felt like the floor had dropped away beneath him. I know he can be difficult sometimes, she said with an indulgent smile, a slight shrug. Geniuses. But I don't need to tell you that both you and he are very important to this mission, and you need to be able to work together. John, whose mind was finally stuttering into action, starting to catch up, opened his mouth to say something, but Elizabeth put up her hand to stop him. I don't need to know the issue, Colonel. You're both mature adults. You can work it out between yourselves. A quick, piercing look. Unless it's something I should know about. John forced his tensed muscles into a shrug. A warm, open smile. That's great. And John, no more punch-ups in the jumper bay, okay? No problem, croaked John, and he left. He made it a few corridors before he threw up on the floor in front of two botanists, who fussed and felt his forehead and had him in the sick bay before he could get himself together. He finally managed to get away, after Carson had made him write down everything he'd eaten in the last 48 hours, in case there was an outbreak of food poisoning, and had told him strictly to go and lie down and drink lots of fluids. He did go back to his quarters, brushed his teeth, turned on the faucet, and held his head under the cold jet until his face ached. Then he got up and went straight to the lab. Rodney looked up the moment he came in, and was already tapping keys to save his work, and shoving his chair back from his desk before John gestured towards the door. Selenka looked between them nervously, and the other scientists all looked away quickly when John glanced around. John wondered if they were worried for McKay's safety and almost laughed. Rodney grabbed his arm the moment they got outside, hard enough to bruise, and muttered out of the corner of his mouth, "Did Elizabeth talk to you too?" "Yeah," said John, and thought forcefully, "Open," at the first door they passed, then yanked Rodney through. Rodney stared around them. "Hey, did you just create a room? Because I swear this wasn't here before." "Rodney!" John almost yelled, and just managed to stop himself from punching the wall, remembering Elizabeth. Rodney jumped and stared at him. "Hey, Wade, are you freaking out?" Yes, I am," said John, and he realized that he was. "But, oh hey, okay, you're sitting down right now. Jesus, are you okay? Should I, get Carson or something? Oh my God, do you have a heart condition?" "I'm fine," John gritted, put his head between his knees and tried really, really hard not to throw up again. Rodney patted his shoulder awkwardly. When John shook him off, irritated, Rodney stood behind him for a little while, not touching, then sat down beside him carefully and tugged at a loose thread on his pocket until John had pretty much finished panicking. "So," he said eventually, "we start eating meals together again. You come to the lab every afternoon to activate stuff. I insult your plans in staff meetings, and you don't boast about my sexual prowess in front of the Marines." "That's your plan?" John said incredulously, lifting his head. Rodney glared. "Well, since, as usual, you seem to be relying on my brilliance to save the day, Colonel, and I have a few other things on my plate at the moment, like, say, saving us all from the many and horrible fates that await us, yes, that's the plan. Feel free to come up with any better ideas, but I think you'll find that that one covers all the bases. I admit that I should have laid down some ground rules for behaviour in public at the beginning, but I was, foolishly apparently, relying on your initiative. I mean, hello?" Rodney pointed at himself. "Genius scientist." Then at John. "Does stupid things. This is your territory. I should be the one freaking out here." John struggled to find something to say. "I just didn't think about how much I had to lose sounded stupid, and besides, it wasn't true." Anyway, Rodney was right. He'd shot the military commander of Atlantis in his first week, for God's sake, and since then he'd disobeyed orders, flown a nuke into a hive ship, and let his lieutenant go batshit crazy and run off into the woods. In terms of attempting to preserve his career, he didn't exactly have a great track record, and that wasn't even counting Afghanistan. "We shouldn't be doing this," he said instead, and it felt like those words had been nestled in his chest, and letting them out had left an aching hollow. "Probably not," snapped Rodney, "but we are. Can I go now?" "Oh," thought John dazedly, still sitting on the floor as Rodney stormed out, already yelling something about long-distance scanners at Selenka before he'd gotten a few feet down the corridor. "Well, okay then." Later that day, he forced himself to walk past two empty tables in the canteen to sit opposite Rodney, who was reading some printouts and shoveling a Thosian stew into his mouth at about the speed of light. He looked up for a second when John sat down and said, "Oh hey, see if you can find any mistakes in these." Handed John a couple of pages and tossed over a red pen from one of his pockets. John ate his stew and weird doughy pancakes and tried to follow the string of equations on the paper, marking anything that jumped out at him, with a distinct feeling of anticlimax. When he was done, he shoved them back over to Rodney and stood up. And Rodney held out his hand, palm open, as he skimmed over the pages. John stood there for a moment, nonplussed, until Rodney said irritably, "Pen." And John flushed, pulled the pen out of his pocket, dropped it on the floor, picked it up, put it in Rodney's hand, jerked back when their fingers touched, and knocked his tray off the table. "Oh, for God's sake," said Rodney with deep disgust. But he bent down to pick up John's cup, where it had rolled under his chair, and set it back on his tray, then said, "Leave it there, I'll take it. See you later." With only the tiniest note of uncertainty in his voice that made it a question. That, and the fact that the paper Rodney was reading was upside down, made John feel a hell of a lot better. That night, Rodney was already waiting for John in the room they'd marked out on the third level, towards the south of the city. "Anyway," he muttered, as if they'd been mid-conversation, struggling to undo John's thigh holster, while John kissed his way up his neck to his ear. "You're, oh God, so hot for me, so don't even think about trying to, oh, do that again." "Busted," said John, surprising a breathy laugh from Rodney, and bent to lick the sweet spot in the hollow of his throat, because, at this stage, really, there was nothing else he could say to that. 3 nights later, when John came out of the shower, Rodney was sitting on his bed, already unlacing his boots. "Just make yourself at home, McKay," John said, and Rodney looked up, opened his mouth, then stopped dead mid-retort. It was like John saw him in slow motion, the catalogue of physical responses, eyes widening, pupils dilating, his face flushing. "What?" John snapped, when Rodney's stare was beginning to make him edgy. "Don't take off the towel," Rodney said, low and hard. John swallowed because, Jesus, he was pretty sure he'd never heard Rodney sound like that before. He looked down at himself, the white towel around his waist, saw what Rodney saw, and got so hard, so quickly, that he saw spots in front of his eyes. Then Rodney said, growled even, "Get over here." And John went, dazed. When he got close enough, Rodney grabbed him by the waist and pulled John in so he was standing between Rodney's parted thighs. Then slid both hands firmly around and down over John's arse and squeezed through the thick, rough cotton. He bent his head to lick John's stomach. "I realise that this isn't exactly," he muttered, pausing to nip above John's navel, "what you had in mind, maybe, but..." And John hissed as Rodney flicked his tongue downward under the rim of the tightly wrapped towel. In the absence of online shopping, he pulled the fabric taut over John's erect cock and blew hotly through the cotton, which scraped almost painfully against the sensitive head every time it bumped against it. "I got you something. In my jacket. Top left pocket." John tried to concentrate as Rodney bit and sucked hard on a spot just above his hip while he fumbled at the zip. Finally got it open and felt something hard against his fingers. Plastic cylinder about 10 centimetres long. He tugged it out and looked at it, and his mouth went dry. Rodney looked up quickly, said, "I have no idea if you, I mean, I just saw it. I can take it back." John popped the cap one-handed and twisted the tube to slide the lipstick up. It was pinkish red, not too dark. "Where did you find this?" He sounded hoarse, unfamiliar to his own ears. Someone left it in the lab." John looked at Rodney, who squirmed a little, then threw his arms up impatiently. "Okay, it may have been in a desk drawer, but what self-respecting scientist keeps makeup in a hazardous environment? I would have confiscated it anyway." "You broke into someone's desk and stole makeup for me." And God help him, it was so gloriously surreal that John couldn't help grinning, even though his mouth felt dry and his chest tight, and he couldn't quite take his eyes off the glistening red column of paint. Rodney coughed embarrassedly, half smug. "Well, maybe. Do you wanna..." He gestured towards the bathroom. "You don't have to. If you want to, you can just keep it. I don't even know if it's the right colour or anything. I mean, I've never even gotten any for women before. I don't know anything about this stuff." "It's fine, Rodney," John said firmly, although his chest was so tight from something like excitement that he could hardly breathe. In the bathroom, he had to stand still for a moment before he could even look at the mirror. Finally, he found the Vaseline and ran a finger over his lips the way his ex, Sarah, used to when she made herself up before he took her out. And then the lipstick, gliding smooth, painting his mouth into a stranger's. He smeared the edges the first time because his hands were shaking, and he had to get some tissue to wipe it off and start again. The next time he was more careful and blotted his mouth on a square of toilet paper, leaving a kiss-shaped print. Then he turned around and Rodney was barefoot in the doorway, watching him, his face naked and hungry. "Thank you," John said, and then he was grabbing the front of Rodney's shirt and kissing his own clean taste out of Rodney's mouth, wet and messy and fierce, and God, what he wanted, what he needed. Rodney clutching convulsively at the towel at John's hip with one hand, interlacing the fingers of the other with John's own. When they broke apart to breathe, Rodney's mouth was stained red and messy, bruised, and it hurt to look at him. "Fuck me," John whispered, rough and unsteady, and felt Rodney breathe out, breathe in again, like this. "Okay." Rodney hardly made a sound, but John felt the cool brush of the words on the corner of his mouth. "Yeah, okay." In the bedroom, Rodney stripped with unerring, jerking movements, all the time staring at John, like he couldn't take his eyes off him, even for a second. And John watched, aching everywhere he wasn't touching Rodney. Then they were falling together, stumbling towards the bed, and Rodney was saying urgently, John, I need... Lube's under the bed. Condom? John hissed through his teeth with frustration, shoving the blanket off the bed and recovering the pillow. I'm clean. Are you clean? Yeah, but... Then hurry the fuck up. Then he was face down against the hard mattress, and two of Rodney's fingers were inside him, stretching him. Starbursts of friction from the rough towel against his cock, jolting through his body with every involuntary thrust, the soreness only making the bolts of heat sharper. "Who says?" Rodney panted behind him and twisted his fingers inside John so that he arched into the mattress. "Crime doesn't pay." "I could still arrest you," John managed. Then Rodney eased his fingers out of him, agonizingly slowly, and shoved the towel up around John's hips. He muttered something that sounded like, "Oh God," and then was there, a blunt, burning pressure, forcing his way slowly in, and John had to bite down on his arm to ride it out, because the twin stabbings of pleasure and pain from the head of his cock against the rough cotton, and from Rodney sliding in, were ripping him apart, and copper blurred the waxy taste of lipstick in his mouth. "John, oh," Rodney said brokenly, sounding like he was drunk, and thrust shallowly, once, as if he couldn't help himself. And this time John didn't bite down in time, and couldn't stop the sob that came out of his mouth. Rodney hissed, "Fuck," and thrust again helplessly, sending sparks down all John's nerves when he was already burnt up too much. "Tell me. Ugh, I can't. John, please, please, Rodney was saying. John couldn't speak, couldn't even breathe. So he braced against the mattress and pushed up against Rodney's weight, tried to make his body open up, say yes. Then Rodney pressed an open-mouth kiss to John's back and was fucking him, making a little ugh noise in his throat with each thrust, rocking John against the mattress, and feeling fill John up like a whirlpool of fire and broken glass until it spilled up and out. And somewhere Rodney gasped, can't, John, sorry, God, I love you. But John was falling with only Rodney holding him and could not hear, could not even remember later, wondering what it was that Rodney couldn't do or what he thought he had to be sorry for. Rodney crept out at 4 a.m. that morning, after dressing in the dark and ruffling John's hair softly as he left, leaving him to doze for 2 hours before he had to get up. It hurt John to pee for one day, to sit down for two, and the red marks on his arm from his own teeth didn't fade for 5. He wore sleeves down to his wrists for that whole week, even when they went to investigate a possible alpha site where it was over 80 for most of the day. And he didn't touch Rodney at all. When Rodney fell down a hole, dislocated his shoulder, and then refused to let anyone reset it until they'd got him back to Atlantis and anesthetized him, John and Ronan held him down and pulled it back into place as he screamed. Back in the medical bay, John stood next to the bed while Rodney bitched at Carson, who was patiently trying to put a sling on him. Far sooner than could have been justified, John snarled, "For fuck's sake, Rodney, don't be such a baby." And Rodney snapped his mouth shut, white and hurt, and let his arm be strapped up. When Carson went to get the ibuprofen, casting a reproachful look at John on his way out, Rodney sat still, his mouth a tight, miserable line, and John stood several feet from him, tapping his feet and so abjectly furious that he didn't trust himself to speak. Eventually, Rodney snapped, "I think you've done enough, Colonel. You can fuck off now." So John did. That night, stupidly, dangerously, he waited in Rodney's room in just a t-shirt for over an hour, until he came back, so John could pull him inside and kiss him, undress him silently, spell sorry onto the purple bruising with his tongue. Rodney muttered, "You're such an asshole." But he kissed John back just as hard. Once, as they were both pulling their clothes back on, zipping up and buttoning down, going back to their room 6 hours before they had to be up again, Rodney, who was always more awake after sex than John, and maybe that was why John didn't notice the slightly odd edge to his voice this time, said, "Why do you like it, really?" John yawned. "What?" Rodney waved his arms in a vaguely suggestive manner. "You know, the women's clothes thing. I mean, you've got to admit it. It's pretty far from the stereotype. Air Force, football, Ferris wheels and things that go insanely fast, all that crap. How does it fit in?" Caught off guard and sluggish with tiredness, John shrugged. "Come on, throw me a clue here," said Rodney. "You're 36 years old. Don't tell me you've never thought about it." "Rodney," John said impatiently, pulling on his backpack, "it's late." "Look," he said, and John was caught short by the note of pleading in his voice. "I just want to know." "I'm tired," John said, really irritated now. "Jesus, Rodney, will you just let it go? Does it make you feel attractive? Is it because it's not allowed? What?" John tried to push past him, and Rodney grabbed his arm, clapped his hand right over the flag on John's shoulder. John recoiled instinctively. Rodney stared at him, then, very deliberately, removed his hand. Fine, he bit out. Whatever. He stormed off towards the nearest transporter, leaving John wondering what the hell that had all been about, and with an uneasy, itchy feeling under his skin that he couldn't shift for days, even after Rodney turned up at his door 3 nights later, with printouts of their most recent assessment of the Genii's progress on their nuclear weapons, and a bad copy of Kill Bill 2, which easily passed as an apology from him. He didn't mention it again until a few weeks later, when he and John were tied to a pole behind a tent, back to back, waiting for Taylor to either negotiate their release or signal Ronan to blast his way through the wooden fence of the encampment to get them out. Both John's hands had gone numb. They'd played prime, not prime for a while. Rodney had complained about his hay fever and briefly panicked about the possibility of his fingers falling off from loss of blood. Then said, "Hey, now that we've got some time on our hands, ha ha, so to speak, maybe you've got time to answer that question I asked you a few weeks ago." John hissed, "Have you gone out of your mind?" And then Taylor came around the corner with two unbelievably tall men holding spears, and that closed the issue anyway. John forgot about it until the next and last time Rodney brought it up, when they were sitting on Rodney's bed, going over some flowcharts, when John lost his patience, snapped, "For Christ's sake, Rodney, I'm in the military. Do you think I talk about it to my fucking therapist? You're the one who knows about the scene, not me. Why do people normally do it?" Rodney blinked at him. "Are you kidding?" he said. "I don't know anything about it. I've never met anyone who was into it before. That's why I'm asking." John stared, completely floored. "But you came to me." "Well, yes," said Rodney, as if it were completely obvious. "If you were into being covered in maple syrup and wearing a diaper, I'd still want to have sex with you." "Are you telling me," John said, trying to keep his voice level, "that all this time you've been pretending to be into this so you could..." "What, McKay?" It was so easy to see the point when the penny dropped. You could practically see the tape rewinding, even before Rodney jumped up, away from John, talking quickly. "Well, when I say I don't know anything about it, I mean, of course, from your point of view, as I've always been more of a theoretical, non-participant. But of course, obviously I'm on the scene." John advanced on him, humiliation sharpening his anger until it felt like it could draw blood. "You lied to me. What is this, Rodney? I thought we had an understanding here." "Oh, do not do that. Do not do that. I've had it with you." Rodney exploded, quite suddenly so furious that John stepped back, shocked. "What do you think I am? Do you think I pretend with you? The deal was, we both get what we want. And the fact that what I want is you had nothing to do with anything." Rodney had gone bright red, and John spread his hands, alarmed, and put on his best, "I'm a reasonable guy" face, which he mostly used for facing down crazy people with guns. "I just would have preferred it if you'd been straight with me from the beginning, Rodney." "Oh, that's really funny," sneered Rodney, and John remembered that that face had never worked too well. "Would that be straight, as in, I'm so straight I have an irresistible compulsion to sleep with every hot alien woman I meet and frequently endanger myself, not to mention my teammates? Oh, and 6 billion people on my planet?" "Hey," protested John, but Rodney was in full flow, pacing and waving his arms, and something in John held him back from stopping him. "And then you go and show alarmingly repressed cross-dressing tendencies. And I think, hey, Lieutenant Colonel's self-sufficiency needs something. Maybe I have a chance after all here." He seemed remarkably receptive, so I drew the perfectly sound conclusion that you're not averse to having sex with me once in a while. Rodney stabbed John in the centre of his chest with his finger, bug-eyed and wild. And John had the feeling that this was all rapidly slipping beyond his control. But Rodney went on before he could think of a way to stop him. I work 18 hours a day to prevent this city and everyone on it from being blown into a million pieces in one way or the other. I've nearly died 43 times in the last 8 months. So tell me, why I shouldn't get something I want when it doesn't hurt anybody? You get to dress up and have sex with someone willing and available? What the hell do you care if I spend a small amount of my precious time in the idiotic and completely pointless activity of being in love with you? I'm essential, essential to the survival of this expedition, and it's your responsibility to... Oh God, I totally didn't mean to tell you that, John. John, I'm sorry. Please, don't. Just forget I said it. I didn't mean it, I promise. I'll never say it again. Rodney slumped against the wall, then slid down to sit on the floor. And John couldn't move, couldn't breathe, because Rodney had flinched bodily when he'd heard the words that had come out of his own mouth. Stared at John, ashen-faced. And all this time, John had thought he was the one who was frightened. Oh, God, muttered Rodney eventually, looking at his hands. I'm sorry, John. I shouldn't have done it. I just wanted. I'm sorry. I'll leave you alone in a second. Just, I want to sit for a minute. God, you have no idea how tired I am. The sight of Rodney, hunched and pale in his frayed t-shirt, looking like all the anger had been drained out of him and left nothing behind at all, left a sick pain in John's chest that twisted until it snapped. And he didn't even realize he'd moved until he was standing over Rodney and reaching, awkwardly, to rest his hand on the back of Rodney's neck. Then he slid his fingers through the short, soft hairs there. Rodney seemed to stiffen up even more, and John felt clumsy and confident, like he was trying to touch Rodney in the wrong language, and had been all this time. He squeezed his eyes shut in frustration, then started to struggle out of his jacket. He ripped it off and threw it into the corner of the room, then started on his pants. You genuinely can't do it, can you? Said Rodney, looking up at John with a kind of despairing bemusement. I can't believe you. You're so screwed up. John stood there with one leg in his pants and tried to think of something to say. What is it with you? It's like you've got some multiple personality thing going on. You hardly talk to me anymore when you're not naked. And if I try and even come within 3 feet of you out there, you look at me like I'm something a wraith has drooled on. I don't know whether I'm going insane or you are. John looked at the hollowness in his eyes, the shadows in his face, and wondered how he had not noticed this. This had been eating away at Rodney inside, and thought that maybe because Rodney broadcasts complaints about everything else, John had stopped looking where Rodney was quiet. You tell me, John, Rodney said tiredly. What am I supposed to think? I don't know, John found himself shouting. And this time, the words weren't leaving an ache in his chest. It was like he'd wanted to say them forever. Like they'd been a constant pain that he hadn't noticed until it went away. I don't know, okay? Jesus, Rodney, this is all just a little bit new to me. I've never even been with a guy before. Rodney's mouth fell open. Oh, he said and swallowed. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. I've never actually, said John helplessly, rubbing at the back of his neck, unable to look at Rodney. I should have told you. You are such a fucking idiot, said Rodney, and he got up, came forward and wrapped his arms around John, clumsy and not gentle at all. And John clung back, laying his head on Rodney's shoulder. Jesus Christ, John. John whispered, I'm sorry. And Rodney rubbed his back and mumbled distractedly into his hair. It's okay, it's okay. I can't believe you, you know that? I should have known. You give crappy head. And you just let me... You stupid bastard. God, I need a drink. Do you want a drink? He jerked out of John's hold and went to pull a plastic beaker from under the bed, still chattering in that high voice that meant he was teetering on the edge of panic. It was cold in the room when Rodney wasn't pressed up against him, so John found his t-shirt and pulled it back on. I don't know what this stuff is. Selenka made it. Did you know he has a still? He's getting 65 proof so far, but mostly we've been using it to clean stuff. He stomped into the bathroom and re-emerged with a glass. I think he uses those red Athosian potatoes. Robinson gets them from the kitchen in exchange for a cut. Rodney, said John, it's not your fault. I know that, Rodney muttered, and he sat down on the bed and put his face in his hands. John sat down beside him, picked up the bottle, poured a shot into the glass, then downed it. When he'd stopped coughing, he poured one for Rodney. He's trying to kill me, choked Rodney after swallowing it, wiping his eyes on his sleeve. Little bastard. They sat next to each other on the bed, their thighs pressed together, and they abandoned the glass, swigging straight from the beaker until they couldn't stand the taste anymore. After a little while, John slipped his arm around Rodney's waist. He felt light, disconnected. I stole that lipstick from Elizabeth's desk before a meeting, Rodney said, and John choked while Rodney giggled brokenly beside him. When I was a kid, I used to steal stuff all the time. I was compulsive. John shook his head helplessly, hiccuping with laughter. And Rodney, in almost as bad a state, gasped, No, seriously. My parents, they took me to a therapist, and I haven't stolen anything in like 20 years. And then you come along and reawaken my bad habits. John folded over, holding his stomach, and Rodney toppled against John, shaking, until they'd both calmed down enough to pull themselves up onto the bed and curl around each other, dizzy, drunk, and tired. Do you want to stop this? John murmured after a little while. No. Good. John waited what seemed a decent interval, then cleared his throat with difficulty. Look, Rodney, he said, I'm not sure I can... I know, I don't care. You'll still... Yes. You'd really... Yes! God, could you make this more humiliating? I'm pathetic. We've established this. Okay, John said. Just as he was drifting into sleep, Rodney said out of the darkness, quiet and meandering, as if he was talking to himself. It's all you, John. You think it isn't. You think you can't be Rambo, and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, or whatever, at the same time. But you can. You're so smart. I know you, and you're brave and strong. You can be anything you want. You know, I've spent my entire life up to now in nice, quiet labs, and now I'm going out, shooting life-sucking aliens, and stealing makeup from my boss for my transvestite colonel boyfriend. If I met me now a year ago, I wouldn't recognize myself. And it's really scary. I'm scared. John wanted to tell Rodney, you're the smartest person I've ever met, and you keep up with us, even though we're trained and you're not. And how when he'd been in the sanctuary of the ancients, he'd let his beard grow, not because they hadn't had razors, but because he hadn't been able to look at himself in the mirror. Mostly, though, he wanted to tell Rodney that recently, pulling on his uniform with the Air Force insignia, made him feel like he was tearing part of himself away, like Peter Pan and his shadow, but that he no longer knew which one of them was the shadow. But when Rodney touched him, he made John believe that Rodney's clever fingers, could sew him back together. He pressed his lips against Rodney's shoulder, warm and dry through his t-shirt. Part of him that was closest and held on to him tightly, tightly. Rodney pressed closer to him. "You're so fucked up," he whispered, and John thought he could feel the gentle rock of the sea cradling the city. The next morning, John had a pounding dehydration headache, and Rodney threw up, swearing foully at Zelenka, Athosian Potatoes, John, and the entire universe, so John went to get him coffee. "You're such an asshole. I hate you," Rodney said. And John kissed the top of his head and was late to the staff meeting. Against all probability, life went on. And things really weren't much weirder than they'd always been. 4 months later to the day, John was saying to Rodney over the radio, "We'll fly right through it." There was a crackling pause. "Oh, surely you can't be serious." "I am serious," drawled John, "and don't call me Shirley." "That's not what you said last night, Colonel," Rodney retorted smartly over the radio link, right on cue. And John choked out a laugh, only somewhere on the way to panic, as the four Marines in the back snickered. "Oh, and if you ask me if I've ever been in a Turkish prison, I'll get you court-martialed for sexual harassment. McKay out," added Rodney. And John suddenly thought, without warning, "We're okay. We're getting away with this." And he put the jumper into a side spin for the hell of it, and whooped as the sky flipped somersaults, blue and bright as summer. "I cannot believe you said that to me in front of four Marines, McKay," John said later, feeling that he should be pissed off, but Jesus, you had to admire the man's balls. Luke parried jabs from the training drone with his lightsaber on Rodney's laptop, and Rodney ran a hand idly up John's thigh, which was bare under the dark blue cotton skirt, a new acquisition from the mainland, gotten through so many go-betweens that John wasn't even sure who'd actually bought it. "Yes, well," Rodney said too airily, "it's all part of my cunning plan to acclimatise you." John frowned, and Rodney ducked into a smirk that seemed oddly shy. "Well, if you've built up sufficient resistance before our next trip to Ur, I, know about this bar in Toronto." John looked down at himself and tried to imagine being in public like this, where no one would know them. The evening air on his bare legs, soft fabric clinging to him all over like electricity, with Rodney's hand on the small of his back, steadying and leading. Rodney would probably pull out a chair for him with ridiculously flamboyant courtesy, buy him some multicoloured drink with umbrellas, and would bend down to kiss him right there with other people's eyes on them and get lipstick smeared on his mouth. "Jesus," John swore fervently, then twisted round and pulled himself up onto Rodney's lap, the skirt riding up around his hips as he straddled him, then took hold of his jaw and kissed him deeply. When he came up for air, Rodney was panting hard and staring bright-eyed. "Yeah," said John shakily. "Okay, we could do that." "John," Rodney whispered, reaching up to touch his face, and he made it a promise, a certainty, like a perfect number. And John pressed his face against Rodney's shoulder through the sudden, blinding moment of feeling wholly like himself. That's the end of Second Skin by Toph.